This talk was given by Jody Hojin Kimball Sensei at the Zen Center of New York City. Hojin Sensei is the head priest and training coordinator at Zen Mountain Monastery and co-director of the Zen Center of New York City. This talk, like all of our talks, is offered free of charge. If you'd like to make a donation, please visit our website at zmm.mro.org/donate. Thanks for your support.
Good morning, everyone, Sangha, and especially welcome to those of you who are here for the first time. It's great to have you this morning. My name's Hojin, and I'm going to start with the Faith Mind poem, which is a very old, treasured verse in the Zen tradition. It's a long poem, and I'm just going to read the first part I'll be working with. The great way is not difficult for those who have no preferences. When love and hate are both absent, everything becomes clear and undisguised. Make the smallest distinction, however, and heaven and earth are set infinitely apart. If you wish to see the truth, then hold no opinions for or against anything. To set up what you like against what you dislike is the dis-ease of mind. When the deep meaning of things is not understood, the mind's essential peace is disturbed to no avail. The way is perfect like vast space, where nothing is lacking and nothing is in excess. Indeed, it is due to our choosing to accept or reject that we do not see the true nature of things. Be serene in the oneness of things, and such erroneous views will disappear by themselves. So that goes on for a while. And this is written by Setsang, supposedly. I'll talk a little bit about him as we go along. Setsang was the third Chinese ancestor, not from the Buddha, but from Bodhidharma, when it came from India to China. There was Bodhidharma, as you remember, Huiko, the one that wanted peace of mind, and then Setsang, the third ancestor. It's a classic, and in a way they say there's a lot of Taoist imagery in it, a Taoist description of a balanced state of mind, the state of what we call Shikan. From Shikantaza, those of you that practice Shikantaza, which I encouraged you to practice that, a balanced state of mind. It's a practice that requires a lot of concentration. That's why we first start with the breath. It's different. So we begin with the breath so we can begin to learn how to come back to the present moment where our life's taking place and begin to concentrate, begin to develop that concentration till we can just sit Shikantaza. So it's not just sitting down and mulling over life by any means. It's learning how to allow each and every thought to drop away until you're in just that beautiful, vast space. And it's kind of like, and in the present moment where life is place and taking place, and it's a vastness, and then things that come through are like clouds, right? So we just see them as clouds, and they, you know what happens to clouds? Right? Keeps moving. And so we really see very directly our moving, flowing nature. But first we have to develop the ability to see what is our thoughts and what is going on. Let that settle. And when we're in that space, there's no judging ourselves or others. Everything's just there, whatever it is. So if you are dying, And in a big way, we are dying, living and dying and living and dying and living and dying. When there's equanimity in that space of being present to it, it's okay. That's just where it is right then. So it's very hard to think of that when we're all clinging and shot through with all our arrows of attachment to our delusions, to our desires, our aversions. That space where there's no separation is a reality that's available to us. Yesterday we did a retreat on with Thank You of Memory and Magic, a day of discovering the details. And we were, the first paragraph says, our bodies are the temples that house the stories of our lives. Some of these stories are big and disquieting. Others are subtle and circling. And when we take time to listen to these stories and get to know our heart mind more fully, our most intimate narratives become a vital part of our liberation. So actually, we don't have to walk around telling ourselves stories. We can actually just walk. And Kinhin, the walking meditation, begins to show us how to do that, how to keep releasing and just do what we're doing while we're doing it, completely here, just here. It sounds really mystical or something, but it's not. It's not. Sunkni, I was telling someone, Sunkni Rinpoche, when I worked with him, they don't call it, he doesn't call it Shikantaza, it's slightly different in Dzogchen called Rigpa. But every time we sat down, he had us bang our hands on our knees and go, whoo! Just to like drop it, like get the, and a few times we were all like, and you realize that that's hard to do, you know, just to let the sound come, but just to like clear your mind with that, whoo! And then sit. It does, it just kind of shakes things a bit. You can try that at home. Or quietly. So we have to communicate, but anytime we try to use a metaphor about anything, you know, about that, so it's already changed. So me talking about vast skies and stuff like that, that's already like away, right? So the way we sit, our posture and practice, we get better at what we do. So we can get better at being very concerned about our life. We can get very better at being disconnected. Or we can get better at being at letting go. And it's actually a choice we make moment to moment in our practice of Zazen and then in our life. And sometimes we don't think that's true, but and sometimes it takes years of practice. I'm just speaking for myself, realizing I've been there, done that. I don't need to go over that again, right? It's like this story that is so familiar and has this juice that we like, even though it's kind of a, maybe not a helpful thing. We'll just keep bringing it in. And so we keep just letting that open. That's called letting go. And I wrote, we didn't get a manual when we popped out how to live our life. And mostly we got the message, we are here with a very particular understanding of what this is, what the self is, as being very solid and fixed and separate. And that is this fundamental misunderstanding that goes on for so many kalpas. This is the heart of seeing what is real and true. It's based on that misunderstanding and us going like, really? Maybe not. like maybe we are flowing actually. And it's probably very true that all of us have experienced this flow at some point, this unrestricted, unconstricted, even just for a moment, like where we weren't laying something on something, and we were just really not separate. I'm using words, but you know what it is inside your body and mind when it does leave go for a moment. And then, of course, we scramble. Oh my God, look at that. What was that? What's happening? Right? Or it decides that we say, oh, this is the most wonderful thing in the world. And then we build this whole superstructure around that experience, which is now gone. And now that experience has turned into this building a description of this wonderful event, rather than the thing happened, it's gone. It's itself. Make the smallest distinction, however, and heaven and earth are set infinitely apart. Wow, what was that? It's a hair distinction. Moments of flow, moments of presence. And we can use our hara, this area right below our navel. It's a very important area for us. And when we're driving our car, walking down the street, being bullied by the rush of impatient humanity on the sidewalk, rather than immediately clicking into all our habitual aversive thinking and feeling, take a breath and it's like, we can do this, right? You don't have to comment and just start talking about the whole situation. I don't like this. I like this. Just to see what that's like, just to take a breath and really be really conscious of our hara and allow ourselves to experience our anger, our impatience, our discomfort, our anxiety. Or if we're looking at a beautiful body going down the street, we can just take a breath and really feel our presence. And then if you want to continue to crave, that's what you see in front of you. That's okay. Just don't make a judgment of it. So practice is not only on the cushion, it's in all of our life. Just notice that all we need is a hair's breadth difference between our reaction and ourself. Hair's breadth. And heaven and earth are set apart. Because what we're doing is we're creating that slight separation. We're acknowledging that there is some difference between our anger and being. And we just let it be that. Breath is just noticing. So Setsang, who's Sozan in Japanese, who wrote this faith mine, he was actually a leper. If this who wrote it, because there's debates. I think scholars just need to do something, you know. I don't know. And this is, you know, back in the 6th century. So to be a leper at that time was pretty tough. There wasn't any cures or anything. And he was a lay person. He was a lay person until he was 40 years old. And then he was ordained and practiced with Huiko. So this title, his Xin Ming, am I pronouncing that right? Faith, this S. H-S-I-N, faith, faith, mind. That was in Chinese. So it's speaking about this first part, his, hin, is that how you say it? H-S-I-N? Faith mind. Okay. It's talking about the very nature of mind itself. Sometimes it's called the trusting mind, or the universal mind, or the Buddha mind. So this mind, when we speak of mind in Zen, could be very confusing. So there's the thoughts and the feelings and the sensations that are flowing through between our ears and our thoughts. That's the contents. Okay, but mind, as it's spoken of, in, as a faith mind, is huge, universal, vast. Like it's the whole world. The three worlds are nothing but mind. So Suzuki Roshi will sometimes call that the other part, the smaller mind, right? The discriminating mind. So the large container, that is everything. The universal totality. And this mind is empty. So there's nothing fixed in anything. It's all in moving, in flux, impermanent. That's the mind we're speaking of in the faith mind, the trusting mind. And ultimately, they're not two separate minds, because all of that other is made up of this great empty mind, this vast mind. So we're talking about the faith mind. And in so this is the 6th century, and he meets Huico, and you might remember the koan with Huico, Huico's peace of mind. Huico was with Bodhidharma. He's the one that chopped his arm off to show his sincerity, and don't do that here. I think you're all sincere. But there was an encounter with Bodhidharma because his mind was so disturbed, and he went to him and he says, "Please, teacher." You know, after he's out there in the snow for the longest time and Bodhidharma just sits facing the wall, Huico says, "Please, please," you know, he says, "What do you want?" And he says, "My mind is not at rest. I'm not at peace. Will you please put it at peace for me?" And Huico and Bodhidharma said to him, "Well, bring that to me." And it said some time passed. We don't know how long. Could have been years. Could have been a week, we don't know. And he comes back and he says, I've looked all over for this mind and I can't find it. And Bodhidharma said, "There, I've set it at rest for you." So Huico now has Setsong, the next ancestor, and this is their koan together. Setsong says, "I am riddled with sickness." Remember, he's a leopard. "Please absolve me of my sin." Huico says, "Bring me your sin and I'll absolve you." And after a while, we don't know how much time he had, "When I look for my sin, I cannot find it." Huico says, "There, there, I've absolved you. You should live by Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha." And this name, Setsong, means gem monk. So he gave us quite a gem with this faith mind poem. And it said that when he finally died, he loved trees, that he was standing and facing a tree because he used to bow to trees. I love him for that. And that he died in Gassho bowing to a tree. We don't have a lot of facts, but that's interesting. So he gave us this poem, which has endured to instruct us as students now, what, 1,400 years later? Wow, still fresh. And he said it's not information to read, like it's not something you like munch on a donut and sort of take in. You really gotta like sit with this. We work with it. It requires an effort over a long period of practice. Some of us have been working with this faith mind poem for years, just line by line. And when we do, it's like you get rerouted. It helps us transform. Just working with the lines, it breaks up our perceptual process. And when we use the word practice, you know, we use that a lot. When that's used, it's not just, as I said, sitting here doing zazen and the zendo, but it's done all the time, all throughout the day, all through the 24 hours. So this poem gives us clear instructions on how to proceed towards liberation. It shows us how to keep from holding our thoughts in bondage. Don't let the mind fall into comparisons at all. Can you believe it? Like, really? So this poem has 34 pairs of opposites that are used as examples of what to not create in our mind, your mind. Love and hate, like and dislike, heaven and earth, for and against, lack and excess, accepting and rejecting, outer things, inner feelings, activity, passivity, one, the other, assertion and denial, emptiness and reality, this and that, right and wrong, dualities and one, object and subject, coarse and fine, easy and difficult, fast and slow, coming and going, free, in bondage, dislike, accept, wise and foolish, one and many, rest and unrest, movement and rest, self and other than self, beings and non-being, one thing, all things, yesterday, tomorrow. That about covers it. Look at a period of zazen. How much time do we do this? I'm doing it wrong. They're doing it wrong. I love her. I hate him. Too fast, too slow. I like this, not that. Moving ahead, falling behind. Control, no control. So fearful in being quiet. Uncertainty. Uncertainty puts us in the state of not knowing or defining, and that's a very riveting place to be. So in the poem, what's pointed out is when we let go of all these opposites, our mind might become very quiet and very expansive. It's a radical state of inclusion. And we can find this out for ourselves. But it's amazing how fearful. Like, if we're not doing that, that's the conditioning. If we're not loving and hating or doing something, the great way is not difficult for those who have no preferences. It's actually another way of saying kind of the four noble truths, life suffers. In a different way. The great way is not difficult, right? For those who have no preferences, when love and hate are both absent, everything becomes clear and undisguised. That's how it begins. Make the smallest distinction, however, and heaven and earth are set infinitely apart. When love and hate are both absent, that's a hard line for most of us. Most of us might say, yeah, we shouldn't hate, but when love is absent, right? This is asking a lot. When love and hate are absent, this is in a sense equating love and hate. And from this, more and more I can appreciate how that aversion, hatred, marginalizing is just another side of love. It's this just this, it's the same thing, it's just a different way of doing it. You know, come here, go away. Come here, go away. In a way, it's the same thing. So when love and hate are both absent, what is he getting at? He's getting at how we work with love and hate. Then everything becomes clear and undisguised. And if we think about love, we think of all the things that encompass our idea of love. So this is a very tricky territory. When I think about love and what's presented as love, a lot of things I love or we love or call love may not be love at all. We have to do our own examination, but ideas, what it's supposed to look like. It's not easy. You know, Daido Roshi, in his photography retreats, used to, one of the later assignments, he used to say, we used to get a visual koan, and it was called Making Love with Light. And he would say, he'd have us all there, and he'd have us sitting, and he'd say, I want you to go out and photograph a feeling of love. Now be careful. Don't photograph what you think love looks like, but the feeling. So, you know, we know he knows that we sat there like he did, and everyone saw, like, what do you think of? I don't know, something on the beach or like a flower, or, and that may be, but if it, he always used to say, if whatever popped in, let it go. It's not that. Just release it. Because he wanted us to first make contact with the feeling and not be predictable. Stay with the sensations and feel the resonance. So as we went out with our camera, we would, and we had as close as we can to that feeling of love, we would see what then drew us towards its, towards us. And then we would say, you know, and it could be just the quality of light or I mean, the smallest, it's very surprising. I've done it many times. And some people would say, get very upset. And it's like, I don't feel it. I don't love. And he would say, everybody loves something. You know, and Trungpa used to say, everyone loves something, even if it's a tortilla chip. So if that's your entry point, a tortilla chip, then go with it. I love tortilla chips, right? Then you can just say, like, wow, there's a feeling. So we would get in touch with that feeling and go out and then let the, you know, we don't take photographs. He would say, they take it, let it take you. Let the image take you. Don't go out and look for it, but be taken. And, you know, he had this whole process of like making sure you had permission. So you don't just, a lot of times with our camera, we jump on things. We take pictures without permission. And there's a subtle way of entering a space and meeting something, not just with a camera, but even with our body, where we know we have permission to be where we are and meet as we're meeting. You could feel it. And that's when we get into the hara and let go of all the talking. I like this, I don't like this, do you ever love it, hate it? And I was talking to a student, and she was telling me, somebody was telling me, a friend of hers whose daughter is 13, and the mother is going through this enormous depression and anger because it's time for the daughter to grow up and be a fledgling in a way. And the daughter's spreading her wings, but to do other things, but, and trying not to cling to her mother. And at the same time, the mother has received, of course, a lot of nourishment from her daughter, and she's very angry with her daughter for growing up. You know, it's kind of a mixed bag. It's like you bring this being into the world, and I have and had this experience. I feel like it with all of you in some way. But you want them to fly. And that's the whole thing you're working with. And she knows this. She's a sophisticated woman, like most of us are. And she knows that this is the situation. And nevertheless, she's suffering a great deal. So together we were wondering, we were taking this up, what kind of love is this? Is this love? Is this what might be in, is this what might be in bondage now that is creating suffering, a kind of twisted thinking that may be present and making it into a thing or her idea that's called love? So she's bringing this up, right? Now I'm just going with her. Satsang says, when love and hate are both absent and everything becomes clear and undisguised. So can we imagine or visualize this moment with the mother and the daughter facing one another and all the ideas about what mother is and what daughter is could just fall away, and they're just there, the two of them, looking at each other? If all the preconditions, all the requirements for an acceptable relationship could just fall away and leave just these two people in that moment with no guarantees about the next moment, but just in that moment, what might this experience be with anyone? Perhaps, I don't know, I called it heart opening, searing for both. And so again, that's turning it with words. How first fast I make it into something graspable because I'm trying to communicate. But language doesn't actually reach that meeting. And is this what he's talking about? He's talking about when we let go of our ideas about what anything is and we just experience that, that's the great way. That's the great way. It's not difficult. So this breath of ours is what sends it down into our temple, into the body, into the space of the container, the dropping of the chatter of the thinking mind, and how we can take in our anxiety or whatever's happening and just be here. Be here in the completeness of it all. So the word we usually translate as faith from Pali is sada. And it's translated as, this is from Sharon Salzberg's book, Heart as Big as the World. And it means to place the heart upon something. Sada, this faith. The faith to place our heart upon something, to give our hearts over to. Heart and mind are one character. Shin. So it's not separate, your heart and mind. How do we know what to give our hearts over to? How can we be definite? How do we know if this will work? What do we trust? And through Zazen, we come to see that the only thing that makes us suffer is how we use our mind. In Zazen, we begin to see that our struggles and difficulties arise very clearly, not randomly, not accidentally, not mysteriously. There is cause and effect. They arise and then stay because of our attachments. That's what the Buddha realized. That's what comes all the way down to this moment. They've opened their eye what any practitioner who has opened their eye a little bit realizes. It's exactly this picking and choosing, pulling towards, pushing away, holding on, rejecting, that creates all the difficulties. And it's so ingrained that that's what we think we have to do. We don't know who we are when we stop. It's stranger in a strange land. Get used to it. If that's where you want to investigate, you feel kind of weird. Because we're so used to picking and choosing, dividing. If we wonder and have questions about trust, we can also rest assured we have the answers. To explore the questions with practice, with the body and the mind. And then another thing Setsang says further down, you should read this, there's about 8 translations on the webs. So if you read different ones, you'll get different words, and that may help you, help us understand differently. Some of them are, I'm not an expert, I'm just going by my own study. I think some of them are like, so, you know, take it in, see what you're seeing. Okay. He says further down, this caught me, when you try to stop activity to achieve passivity. Who knows that one? When you try to stop activity to achieve passivity, your very effort fills you with activity. As long as you remain in one extreme or the other, you will never know oneness. So this, when you try to stop activity to achieve passivity, and I know this is not just me, it's many of us, and I've had to work through this very severe voice that says, I'm gonna sit down and I'm gonna get it. And I'm gonna let go. And I'm sit so tight, and I'm sort of jamming it all in. And, you know, all this energy to achieve passivity, right? And in some ways, we have to go through that to see it. You know, trying so hard to let go. I tell you, the self is fine. Leave it alone. Don't mess with it. Your self knows itself just fine. Stop diddling. We got to stop diddling with it. It's absolutely perfect and complete, lacking nothing. But we got to see. We got to see all. We got to work with the complications so we can relax. We really do. All the wanting to be and all of that. We have to go through that. I think of myself wedging clay, you know, when I was just learning pottery, and like all I could see was the pot with the glaze on it, and I couldn't even wedge, and it was just like I'm trying to be that, and I can't even get my clay lined up, you know. So I'm already on the finished product, and it takes you so away from the moment and the stillness. The ease. And I always tell people, please sit and sit into your radiance. Find your radiance, no matter what's going on. Just make it for you that this is your radiance. You want to see, and it includes everything, the good, the bad, and the ugly, as we say. And that's the gift, is that seeing. How else will we know? How else will we get conscious? But just don't pick and choose. I want that. I don't want that. This is okay. That's not okay. Take it through the heart. It's really important. A relaxed body with discipline. And I'm a sitter, so in order for me to pay attention, I do have to sit down. You know, I've been a mover and a shaker. I still am. But we have to quiet down. I think it's essential. and carry that through life, through the 24 hours, to have that ease in all aspects. And when we're comfortable with ourselves, we can let others in. If we're comfortable with ourselves, we can let others in. And they're our mirror. So where we're not comfortable with others, just look in the mirror. Like, it's hard, but where aren't we comfortable in? You know, where aren't we comfortable in? So at the end of the verse, he says, one thing, all things, move among and intermingle without distinction. One thing, all things, move among and intermingle without distinction. To live in this realization is to be without anxiety about non-perfection. To live in this faith is the road to non-duality, because the non-dual is one with the trusting mind. Words. The way is beyond language, for in it there is no yesterday, no tomorrow, no today. To live in this faith is the road to non-duality, because the non-dual is one with the trusting mind. And what is the mind trusting in? Yourself. Your direct experience. It's not, this faith mind isn't about believing the Dharma or believing the Buddha. It's, or becoming a soldier of Buddha. Faith mind is to live in this realization and to be without anxiety about non-perfection. Breathe. And I think we know this to be true. But we're busy protecting and judging ourselves, and then externalizing that and judging others. And that, and then through that, we can't live in this kind of trust. And there's a freedom that is this kind of trust. And really, when they say just do it, it's just do it. It is just do it. Shugen Roshi has this beautiful thing he says. He says, we think of that the human condition is a life of toil and confusion. It sounds so factual and unavoidable. Slip into it, grit your teeth, get on with it. But is that a human condition, or is that the conditioned human? The self-created self is my view, my thoughts, my feelings, my perspectives, my rights, my wrongs, my pain, my woes, my stories, mine, 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 mine. Where does it end? I think of George Harrison. All through the night, I me mine, I me mine, I me mine. When love and hate are both absent, the way is clear and undisguised. When the self-created self is freed, in other words, when we no longer trap our thoughts, that's it. It's all that secretion between this ear and this ear. All of that. This is like amazing that we were created this way. Go step by step along the path. It may have 99 curves on it, but we can walk straight. That's what this is about, straight. So really, really, really trust yourself. There's a line in another poem. The lotus flower is unstained by mud. We know that lotuses grow out of muck, right? I've grown to love the muck. I think I've always been a muck lover. You know, as a potter, you gotta love the muck. The lotus flower is unstained by muck. This single dewdrop, just as it is, manifests the real body of truth. So this lotus flower is used as a metaphor because it grows out of the stinking mud. Hello. But it's an incredibly beautiful flower. We would call it pure and alive. This very body is the body, is realized as the Buddha. We say this all the time. The Buddha, the one who wakes up, who woke. So trust that you can wake up too to this fresh aliveness that's so connected to all this gushy, wonderful nutriments, our life, just as it is. This very body is and mind is the Buddha. Give life to the Buddha. Thank you.
Thanks so much for listening. The monastery's quarterly journal, Mountain Record, has a new home at mountainrecord.org. For over 30 years, Mountain Record has been offering spiritual seekers of all faiths a unique journey through words and images. Each quarterly issue delivers a thought-provoking array of classic teachings, contemporary wisdom, stunning photographs, and news from the Mountains and Rivers Order. For more information, to subscribe, or to read our open access articles, visit mountainrecord.org.